Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
All right, welcome in here on this Monday edition of The Early Line. It's The Grid, sportsgrid.com. Joe Ranieri alongside Dane Martinez as we look to pick up the pieces from what was a just absolute craziness here over the weekend. The last 72 hours, of course, we have been able to have an opportunity to check our favorite teams and see, did they get the players we thought? How did our prop bets come out? Does, you know, who won the draft, who didn't win the draft? Not only round one on Thursday, but of course, round twos and three on Friday, and then culminating on Saturday over the weekend, the ability to be able to round it all out, get Mr. Irrelevant, and now we get to kind of kick back here a little bit and dissect what was a crazy 72 hours in the NFL draft, which, mind you, I thought went fairly well with the NFL doing their first virtual draft. I thought it was nice being able to have kind of a peek inside. You got good old Andy Reid wearing his Hawaiian shirt, doing his thing. You know, Vrabel's got a kid that's on the bowl in the back. It was actually pretty cool being able to get a chance to see that, Dane. But listen, here at The Grid, we did a great job of holding our own virtual draft, bringing you guys live coverage. Kind of a first for everybody involved, including the NFL. But all in all, a very successful weekend, not only from those of us that were broadcasting to you, but of course those that were looking to get drafted, and some teams more than the other, Dane. And now that you've had an opportunity here to kind of walk away after you spent 10 hours here over the weekend straight of covering the first three rounds of the draft, now that you've had a chance to kind of step away here, tell me, what were some of your initial thoughts about the draft as a production, as a whole here? How do you think the NFL did? How did you think it came off?
And that's really the first place we should go, right? We're going to get into the X's and O's, mm-hmm. winners and the losers, the team needs and all that stuff and what it means as we spin it forward. But honestly, Joe, that was, I think, one of the biggest headlines of the draft, this idea that, you know, given the conditions, given the times that we are in, we had to do this virtual draft. Mm-hmm. There was so much conversation going up into it, right? Like, should they push the draft back? Should they get extra time? What will the dress rehearsal be like? There were issues, you know. But I think ultimately it had a positive effect, Joe. I really believe it did. I think it humanized a lot of aspects of the draft, not the least of which is the commissioner himself. Right. The idea of booing the commissioner, it turned even into a hashtag. This idea that he's announcing the picks with like a grid of like 16 or 20 fans from that team that are booing him. I thought it was great when he was announcing a Vikings pick. They were doing the skull clap together. So I think it did a great job to humanize the commissioner. Mm-hmm. And then I think it did a great job to humanize the players that were drafted, seeing them celebrate with their families in their home environments. One of the players, if you remember, had his dad like roll on the floor. That was hysterical. And then it also humanized the front office folk and the head coaches and the GMs of all these teams, right? I thought that part was really, really cool. Yep. You know, we see the GMs of some of these teams. Joe, this is their Super Bowl, right? Yep. They work all year to get this weekend or last weekend right. And I thought it was so cool to see the authentic reactions of some of the GMs, of some of the head coaches, Joe Douglas with his kids. You mentioned Vrabel with his kids in costume, right? And then there's other things we could obviously joke about, like Jerry Jones on his $250 million yacht, maybe outdone by Cliff Kingsbury's pad, mm-hmm. which I thought was very cool. And then also, of course, Bill Belichick, I think, doing a troll job by having his dog there, like kind of situated there amidst the picks. I thought that was incredible. And the fact that, you know, we talk about how we're all in this together, right? And mm-hmm. coronavirus has us all doing work in different ways, I thought it was a great job to humanize so many aspects of the draft. I truly wonder, Joe, if parts of this, the way it was done, have legs and will stay in future drafts. Like, I know the NFL is not going to miss an opportunity to have 500,000 people go through the fan fest at Vegas or Nashville or Philly. But I do wonder if, like, it can be a little bit more of the norm to have some of these video conferencing, right? Or have maybe a GM of a team not in the war room with everybody. I do think there's some elements of this that the NFL needs to consider moving forward.
Yes, I agree with you. And not knowing what to expect, I think that was maybe the biggest thing, is that we really just did not know what we were going to get. But what we ended up getting was a lot more reality, I think, than when this, and I get the cities and I get what you're doing. You know, the cities bid on it. It is a spectacle, of course, but, you know, life changed as we know it just about a month and a half ago. So in the process, you know, this virtual draft turned out to be a spectacle of itself in a really good way, trying to get not with these big parties and, you know, Jameis Winston, you know, eating crab legs and all that. Nothing like that. It was very down to earth. It was very realistic, very, you know, small family circles and units having a good time. Roger Goodell at one point, of course, not even bothering to getting up, just sitting in his chair in his basement.
Like us at Sports Grid after hours.
Exactly.
On Friday, he was in like a shirt and tie.
Yes.
And on Thursday, he was in a shirt and tie. On Friday, he was kind of like in a sweater. By the time it hit round like five on Saturday, he was just chilling in a t-shirt, lounging in his basement, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And I think, again, it humanized everything from a more personal aspect, fitting with the times that we are in.
I thought it came out great all around the board. And now, of course, here we are approaching the end of April, of course, which means the possibility for a lot of places, the end of the quarantine in some states there. And a lot of places are beginning to, or at least trying to put together some plans to kind of get it going again and try to get back to at least some sort of normalcy in places, including the NBA, which over the weekend announced that they're going to go ahead and allow some team facilities to open up in states, of course, that are going to be in a position there to allow that to happen. Not group practices, so to speak, but individual players who want to come and work out and use the facilities, they are going to allow that to open up. Of course, that is really the first step towards getting back to the court that we have heard. Since they all walked off the court with the announcement of Rudy Gobert coming down with the coronavirus back in the middle of March. So that looks like it's going to happen come Friday, May 1st, that they announced that that's what we're going to do. They haven't announced who, what, where. Obviously, teams in New York and L.A., that's going to be a little bit of a different story. But certainly other places, you know, Oklahoma City, for instance, some of these places where it looks like some states are going to be trying to get back to some normalcy and kind of opening things up a little bit at a time. Looks like the NBA will start to have some, we'll have some players at the very least beginning to get back into shape for whenever that might be that they do decide to continue the season and, of course, eventually crown a champion.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting, Joe, is remember about a few weeks ago, we were starting to say that whenever these leagues, whether it's the NBA or otherwise, whenever they come back, there's going to need to be 2-3, maybe a full month of kind of runway for this, right? That practice. We talked about how athletes need to be back in quote-unquote game shape, right? We can't just drop them in the NBA playoffs. We can't just have opening day of the Major League Baseball season. We've said this for a while, that there will need to be some kind of period of time where they are back and practicing. And to me, with this idea, I saw the same thing. They're saying May 1st, some facilities may open if you are in states where the restrictions are being eased, right? Because they are going to follow the government advice, right? They're not going to do it unless like the governor or the mayor or whatever the powers that be are saying we're easing those restrictions. So I do think this is the first signal. And I'm excited by that, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that it looks like they're doing this in the phased way, right? And now allowing for teams to get back and start practicing or get back to their individual drills so they can, if and when this thing's open up for games, yep, they can be in the right, you know, kind of in the right game shape.
We did, of course, and listen, we've said it all month. We said, all right, you know, come May 1st, that is going to be the time for us to, or at least these leagues, to be able to have enough information. We had hoped that come May 1st anyway, we know they have enough information to at least be honing in on a plan, not knowing whether or not that plan is going to be able to come through fruition, of course, but that we would at least have an idea of where some of these leagues are heading to now. And it looks like the NBA has begun the ability for players and teams to be able to start moving back into some of the facilities. I would anticipate that this week we'll also hear from Major League Baseball, for instance, the NHL. If the NFL continues to do business as usual, which is, it's what they've always done, it's what I would do as well until you hear otherwise. We're not really at that point with the NFL at this time to have to begin to push things back or maneuver along those lines. But I got to feel probably the end of this week, Dane, we'll at least have a little more clarity, which is really all I think we all wanted as fans to say, just, we don't need exact times. We don't need exact dates. Right. Just give us a little clarity as to where you're thinking now and what the answer, what needs to happen, so to speak, right, in order for us to get back to a place where we can get our sports back.
I've always said that, right? It's not about the date. It's about like the markers that we need to accomplish, right, in order to proceed to kind of like the next phase, right? And we see this even on a government scale with this phase one, phase two, phase three. It's not about a date. It's about, hey, when you satisfy X, Y, and Z conditions, we can try opening up a little bit more. Yep. And when that works, whether it's 14 days of declining cases or whatever the case may be, what are the parameters, right, for us to move, you know, kind of more in that direction, Joe? As it relates to the NFL, though, the NFL still has the luxury, Joe, of time on their side, right? They don't get going until the fall. OTAs and stuff don't happen until the summer. They get the luxury of the NBA, Major League Baseball, MLS, and other sports having to figure it out kind of before them. The NFL gets lucky, in my opinion, that them actually coming together to practice or to gather, something not like the NFL draft or free agency, them actually coming together, they're going to be able to just follow on some level, you know, or take their cue from, say, Major League Baseball or the NBA. It's Major League Baseball or the NBA that is going to be the one that has to make these decisions in consultation with local governments and what have you. Right. You say it all the time, Joe. You don't want to be the first one, and you don't want to be the last one.
That's
lucky
good
for the NFL, because of the schedule and the calendar, they will not ever have to be the first one at this point.
No, exactly. And I think really also it's getting to the point where a lot of folks in many parts of the country are saying, all right, it's we need to hear something here, guys. We're anticipating, you know, some states, again, moving forward, beginning to open up the businesses, economies, kind of giving folks, and they're not going to do it all at once, but there are going to be certainly places here in this country that are going to be, shall we say, more able to host teams and games and those types of things than others. So the real question, I think, certainly with Major League Baseball is identifying what those states are going to be and when now can we expect some of these players who, many of them, listen, they've been staying at home. They're in condos. We've seen it. Guys are taking batting practice in their living room. They're hitting nets. They're doing everything they can. Pitchers, guys doing their, you know, the very best that they can. And we know two of the major cities and major metropolises that carry a number of professional teams, West Coast, East Coast, they are kind of, you know, they're kind of at a disadvantage right now with some of these other teams. So I do think it's going to be interesting how they get it revved up, how they get everyone at least back to a facility in order to do it. But I do think, of course, we are in a, and just think about how crazy this is, Dane, where we are now with this virus and as compared to where we were just 2-3 weeks ago when we started in April, the extension to April 30th felt like it was going to be a million years. But here we are, Dane, we're coming up on April 30th, and really the next couple of months are going to be vital in order for us to be able to get our sports back. Places like Vegas, places, a lot of places right now are getting ready, and I don't blame them. Of course, everything in moderation. A lot of places are getting ready for any sort of normalcy, which is great. And that includes, of course, getting some of these sports teams and these athletes into a position to remain safe, but of course, remain to be able to play some games here coming up over the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand the push and pull out there, right? And every kind of facet of it, you know, the idea of earning money versus the idea of the public health, the idea of getting back to normalcy with the fear of second wave. You know, for me, the biggest thing here that makes it so complicated, Joe, is if you talk about a league of sports in America, those teams and franchises are spread out all across the country, right? And every single state is going or is experiencing this virus and the curve, as it were, in a different way, with a different apex, on a different time frame. And that's so interesting to me. You talk about, say, the coast or New York, you know, or Florida, or some of these other states that are more affected. But New York, for example, is supposed to be, you know, flattening the curve on the way down. What happens now when some other region of the country or another major city in this country all of a sudden starts to spike? You know, we're almost doing, we're trying to treat 50 different curves as though they are the same curve. And that's really complicated part to me for any of the calculations about what's safe, what's prudent, what's the cost benefit analysis of opening, right? Because that calculation is different in New York than it is in Atlanta, than it is in Oklahoma City, than it is in Portland, than it is in California. And that's where it's so complicated, quite frankly.
It's going to be a very delicate balance here, but I do think also it's going to be, this week's going to be very telling on the information that comes in and when we what we can expect, when we can expect it. We are not, there are definitely never going to be people that are 100% on board one way or the other, but this really isn't a matter of appeasing everybody. It's trying to do what is smart, what is feasible, because we all know this can't continue much longer. It's really not going to be able to live life and sustain life as we know it doing this much longer. So I do think come May 1st, come this Friday, we should all have much better clarification as to the direction that that professional sports in this country and, of course, everything that trickles down and comes along with that will be getting back to at least some normalcy. But in the meantime, we got a lot to cover from what happened over the weekend in the NFL draft. Also, a lot of trades and signings and, you know, all sorts of things happened over this weekend in the NFL. Not just, of course, with Joe Burrow, what a shocker going from Cincinnati, but all of the other big question mark sort of free agents or disgruntled, shall we say, employees of some of these NFL teams. What direction are they going? It's kind of fascinating, Dane, when you had a minute or two to be able to step back and look at construction of what happened here over the last, you know, 72 hours or more. There are definitely some winners from this weekend, and there's some head scratchers that, well, I don't even know if they won. It's so damn head scratching. I don't even know if they won or lost. I can't tell. But then there are that definitely groups of, I think, some teams that had opportunities to make a difference, but they didn't. So Dane and I will go over our list of winners and losers and some of the big storylines and teams that are swapping players and big name signings. Everything you need to know. We'll have it for you coming up next here on The Grid. It is The Early Line. It is SportsGrid.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, welcome back in. It is the Early Line on the Grid, sportsgrid.com. Joe Ranieri alongside Dane Martinez as we are back. Very important week right now, given everything that as a country, as a sports fan, as a individual, that as a human that we have had to go through over the last 45 days or so. Dane, this will go down as a period in time, of course, that is truly unlike any other that we have seen, my man. It is just, it is nuts on so many levels. But yet, here we are, man. We find ourselves in a situation where there's not a whole lot, shall we say, nothing has been consistent. It's kind of been a very unique thing and a lot of unique happenings. But the one thing that we, even leading up to this last month or so, Dane, the one thing that the time frame that we had circled, which gave us a little bit of normalcy in a very crazy, crazy atmosphere, was the NFL draft. And we got it. A lot of speculation. And I know, Dane, we talked about it for weeks leading up to it. And, you know, I had said, listen, this is going to go one of two ways. This is either going to be the craziest thing we have ever been involved with in our life. There is going to be all caution out the window. We're just going. We're trading. We're doing. We're doing all these things. Or it was going to be one of the chalkiest, drafts that we have seen in a long time. And certainly when it came to the top of that draft, that top 10 there, Dane, not a whole lot we did not see coming. And the idea of people jumping up and moving for Tua and all of those prop bets that came along, Dane, it was, shall we say, uneventful, to say the least. Very chalky. Detroit fielding calls. Washington, would they, wouldn't they take Chase Young? When it came down to it, the biggest names on that board kind of went to exactly the teams they thought that we thought they were all going to go to. And can I tell you something? I don't fault the teams. Smart decisions, right players at the right time, and nobody went crazy until we got to, of course, that middle of the first round there. But at least the top half, the stars, the right players went to the right teams.
Yeah, I would agree with pretty much all of that, Joe. You know, and I do think you and I have now been in this game for a little while. You and I talked about it as smokescreen season. You know, so when we were hearing those reports, we mm-hmm. at that point were like, we had the BS meter up a little bit more. We were like, is this really a smokescreen? Does this make sense? There are a lot of things that were coming out in the weeks leading to the draft where, Joe, you and I were like, I don't know. This may be just an effort to depress the market or to dissuade others from trading, right? When others may have reacted left and right to every report that they saw. Ultimately, it did go, I would say, relatively chalky and say like the top 10. And I wonder, Joe, I want to get your thoughts. Do you think that was more a function of kind of the unique situation we were in? You know, the idea that these teams maybe couldn't invite all the players in, mm-hmm. maybe couldn't have 3-4 different GMs on the horn at the same time to talk trade while they were on the clock. You know, do you think that this was the, you know, coronavirus virtual draft? Do you think that made it more likely for it to go chalky and have no trade, say, in the top, you know, 10 or 15, like it happened?
That was definitely one of my concerns, was that we, you know, let's not overthink this. We already know a lot of teams were not going to have the opportunities to meet face-to-face, nor were their doctors and staff going to be able to meet players like Tua, real game changers. They're really, you know, that was always going to be a problem and a big question on who was willing to risk it. I think the other factor that played into why this thing started out so chalky at the top was because this draft especially was filled with game-changing players, with guys that could absolutely help and change the direction of a franchise. And when you have that much talent, Dane, there's not really a need, so to speak, to reach and to try, you know? I mean, because when you look at how this draft ended up working out, like when Isaiah Simmons falls to number 9, That tells you everything you need to know. And we're not ripping anybody 1 through 8 for the players that they chose. And Simmons, you know, many of us thought was going to be a top 5, falls to number 9. That's the kind of quality of player. I think that that would help understand and explain why it is that the draft kind of started out the way it did, because so many teams, you couldn't go wrong, especially with those first 10 picks.
Yep.
You weren't going to make a mistake one way or the other, Dan. And that goes to show you just how good this class really is, I think.
Yeah, I think that's one way of looking at it. The other way I'm saying is this idea that, you know, in especially the context of this unique year and the virtual draft and all that stuff, listen, if you just make a pick, that's one level of risk, right? If you trade up to make a pick, that is shining a little bit of a light on the GM, right? And the fact and their kind of trust that they're going up to get their guy, or that it will be a good pick. So there's more reputational risk to you as a GM if you go up and make the move. So that could be part of why it didn't happen as well. But when we look at the top, I'd say 11 picks, Joe, I don't think there were any huge surprises, okay? I would say that one was a small surprise for me, was the New York Giants at 4. Not that they went offensive linemen, but when you had the choice of all 4 offensive linemen that was still on the board, picking Andrew Thomas as the cream of the crop was something that I didn't see in a lot of other places, okay? I saw Wills or Wirfs being kind of the first one off the board at the tackle position, and the Giants and Dave Gettleman seem to prefer Andrew Thomas. But again, this is not something that I think is a huge
issue.
I'm not going to, you know, completely make fun of Gettleman. He went offensive line. Maybe his board had Thomas above Wills and Wirfs. So that's fine, right? Everyone was saying that all 4 of these guys were graded to be, you know, high-end picks. So I can't fault him there. The only other one that I kind of, I guess I would say, got wrong per se was the Cardinals at 8. You said they got Isaiah Simmons. They took him number 8 overall, Joe. Mm-hmm. And for me, I thought the Cardinals were another team that could have prioritized offensive line.
Right.
We were talking about them protecting Kyler Murray as a priority, right? They go Isaiah Simmons. Now, I ain't mad at the Isaiah Simmons pick. He is a very talented player. Yeah. And what I think is one of these also takeaways for me for the draft, Joe, is this idea of versatility.
Yes.
We're seeing more and more the positionless defensive player in the NFL, right? Like, and the idea of, well, is he a weak side linebacker? Is he a safety? Is he a corner? Yep. Like, is he an edge? Is he a linebacker? That's less important as more and more teams go to this kind of amoeba defense, right? And so I think Isaiah Simmons is a playmaker and a football player, and so it is fine there. I just thought they would go O-line. But then, Joe, the Arizona Cardinals are one of a number of teams that kind of played chicken and stared it down.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And risked it and still ultimately got what they wanted later on in the draft. For example, Joe, with the Cardinals at number 8, I thought a need was offensive line. We had talked about it before. They waited. They were patient. And ultimately, they still got Josh Jones in the top of the 3rd round. You know, I'm sure you've seen the movie Braveheart, when William Wallace is there and like the horses are charging at him and he's telling his whole crew to hold, hold, hold. That's what I feel like a lot of teams had to have, kind of the testicular fortitude
to
be able to do in a number of situations in this draft. There's a few of them. Our guy Joe Douglas certainly did it as it related to the wide receiver position.
Right.
But that's what Arizona did there. And it worked out for them because they still got Josh Jones in the 3rd round.
That's correct.
Some mock thought he was a late 1st round kind of talent.
Yep.
So those are the only places in the top 10 that I would say weren't like huge surprise or weren't huge head scratchers, but were the places that sort of deviated from conventional wisdom.
Yeah, there was, and again, I think that just goes to speak on the quality of the kinds of players that were available, because we've had drafts in the past where we're very top heavy and then the rest was like, whatever, who cares? Take, you know, at this point, they're all the same. But I do think that there were opportunities for some teams to get first round talent in the 2nd and 3rd round that guys, for whatever reason, injuries and whatever the reason may have been. But I do think there were certainly, and you saw it with the amount of moves that were made where teams really went out of their way to either to trade up and do certain things at certain points outside of the 1st round, where you don't often go up and do that and take the kinds of players that they were taking if they weren't really convinced. And There was a lot of that in the second and third round here, which, again, I think when you look at this draft and Simmons was just one of the guys here, the fact that and I love how there weren't a lot of surprises. We did offense, defense a lot throughout the draft on what would a team go. For the most part, it all fell right to what we thought it was. Now, we did think, of course, that the Cardinals would go ahead and go offense. But you're not expecting Isaiah Simmons to be there at number eight. Like you said, you got to go with the best player on the board. And when you're top 10, that's not, nobody's going to fault you for that. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury is an offensive guy. Some guys just become too good. And we had said it, Dane, what was going to be that player that was going to fall further than we thought they were? Some thought Okuda, depending on what Detroit was going to do. Detroit goes and gets Okuda, does exactly what we think they're going to do. I think by the time we got to eight, the Cardinals were like, Isaiah Simmons is here? Like, really? Like, you know, Kingsbury in his pad looking like something out of Miami Vice was, dude, he was spot on. You can't, some guys you just can't pass up because you don't think they're going to be there, Dane. And sometimes best player on the board means get the damn best player on the board. You can never go wrong with that philosophy.
No, I'm with you, Joe, you know, especially at the top 10, especially when we're talking about a guy like Isaiah Simmons, who many people believe to be a future star in this league, right? So he, you know, did the William Wallace hold or made the calculated risk, played the game of chicken, and wound up still with Josh Jones in the third round. It's not like he didn't know that was still a need, or him and Kime, let's say, the office, the team, didn't know that that was still a need, and then they addressed that need. I would say, for example, the New Orleans Saints were also similar. They go and get Ruiz in the first, at the back half of round one, when a lot of people thought that linebacker may be a place they went. And I believe Patrick Queen was still on the board when they made their pick in the first round. What do they then do? They see Nick Bond still on the board at the beginning of round three. And they were like, we still got a chance to address this need. Yep. They went up and traded for him because they saw him still on the board. And they were like, oh, let's go right now and go get our guy. The New York Jets did a similar thing at the wide receiver position. Yep. We were wondering, some people thought at number 11 overall, they would start the wide receiver run. They did not, kind of making the calculated risk that a starting level wide receiver would be there for them in the second round. Then when their pick comes up in the second round, they trade back again, taking the calculated risk that the guy that they ultimately want or would be comfortable with will still be there. They go all the way back, I believe it was to 59, and still address the issue, getting the wide receiver out of Baylor, Denzel Mims, who is going to wind up being a day one starter for them. So this idea of like calling the bluff or reading the market or playing chicken with it and taking the calculated risk, I thought was a big time story, and it worked out for a lot of teams that decided to take the gamble.
There were, and again, high quality players available through three rounds of an NFL draft says something, guys. Says something about the quality of the certainly the programs that they're coming, where college football is today, and I think the message is loud and clear. And if you're watching here, boys and girls, moms and dads, if Junior wants to play in the NFL, he better go to the SEC. I'm just saying it, all right? It is not that hard to figure out. You want to go to the NFL? You want a ticket to the NFL? That ticket is through the SEC, who set all sorts of records, of course, with players getting drafted, which it really comes as no surprise since they've been doing that since 2007 every year. They've always been the conference with the most NFL players. But if there was going to be a shock here, maybe at the top of this draft, Tua falling to Miami is as crazy, and especially, and I know a bunch of dudes who lost a lot of money in prop bets thinking this week he was going before number five. But Miami, I thought, did an amazing job too. They sat there patient and said, you know what? He's here. I'm getting him. They weren't going to go out of their way. They weren't going to panic. They did. He was there. They took him. Brilliant, right? The Chargers now all of a sudden have the opportunity to go, all right, what do we do? Do we load up or do we? No, they obviously loved Herbert. And so when he is there on the board, that's what you're going to do. But what happened by the Giants going chalk, by Miami and the Chargers going chalk, that all of a sudden had situations where when the Jets came at 11, which is where we thought that wide receiver run was going to happen, All of a sudden, they've got a guy now for the next 10 years that's going to protect Sam Darnold. And how he even fell to the Jets is beyond me. And how the Jets didn't screw it up and let him drop even further is also amazing in its own self. But then, of course, at number 12, we started to see that. But Jerry Jeudy sitting at 15 for Denver. Denver, I don't know what they did, Dane. I don't know what kind of Christmas wish they got there. That was tremendous for them. We thought they might go receiver anyway to help, of course, with Drew Lock. We didn't think it would be Jeudy there to be able to help him. And, you know, Jerry Jeudy being there. And then, of course, CeeDee Lamb falling to the Cowboys was just
both of them.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. They stayed on the board that long. And we're talking about game-changing receivers here from day one in the NFL, Dane. And they didn't go until 15, which is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I think the wide receiver market was another one of my big takeaways for this draft, Joe, on a number of levels. And I know we're about to go to break in a minute or two, so maybe we keep this conversation on the other side, right? We heard there were so many wide receivers, 10, 15, 20, that could go early on. I really think what's interesting is the supply and demand of it all, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of teams, when they were up and had to make an individual decision, do I take one of these wideouts or do I take the calculated risk that they'll still be there later on, decided to address other needs. But specifically Lamb and Jeudy, I think for different reasons, Joe, and maybe we can get into it on the next segment, I literally believe that those two picks shine a huge spotlight on the quarterbacks of those two teams. Yep. And we can talk about it more on the other side.
We will do that. Yeah, plenty more to talk about in that wide receiver position. Who went first, who they went to, and what team spent the most capital improving that wide receiver position. So much to talk on that. A lot of different angles, of course, to still dissect. It is the NFL draft. It is over, but we're just getting started here. It is the early line. It is the grid. It is sportsgrid.com. Dane and I will be back right after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in here to The Grid. It is the early line. I'm Joe Ranieri. He's Dane Martinez as we continue to hash it out, break it down. So many different ways to look at the 2020 NFL Draft. A first in so many ways, Dane. When it comes to starting, of course, with the virtual draft and a draft that many people were looking so forward to because names like Herbert and, Tua were in it, along with just some absolute ferocious defenders like Chase Young and Joe Burrow, for instance, at the top. I mean, there was just so much intrigue heading into this draft. So many quality players that players from all across the country and all the conferences that could be difference makers. And that to me is the hardest part, is finding guys in a draft. And we've seen some of these drafts before years later where you look back and you go, man, it was a lot of hype, not a lot of substance. Over here, there are a lot of players that get to know them. And of course, we'll go over this as the week progresses, too. Certainly from a fantasy standpoint, there are some guys that are going to be fantasy monsters here from day one in the NFL. But we talked about, very interesting, still at the top of this board, when you look at that run when wide receivers started to go off. Now, it started with Henry Ruggs, which, again, we kind of, I know a lot of people are very skeptical about this and said it was the ghost of Al Davis Pass. You basically went with the guy who's the fastest, the shiny new toy.
Sign him up.
I get it. You know what I mean? Listen, Tyreek, I don't think this is so much a product of Al Davis as it was a product of what Tyreek Hill has done and what he has brought to the table in that same division, by the way. Against Kansas City, I think it's that what Tyreek Hill has brought to that team and to the NFL, when you had an opportunity to go get him, all right, because Ruggs and Tyreek certainly coming into the NFL, pretty much same skill set here, guys, pretty much the same thing. And now, of course, they're hoping that they've got their own version when they go up against Kansas City and say, how do you like that? So I don't hate it. I mean, everyone thought Judy might have been better as CeeDee Lamb, but again, I don't think you could have went wrong with all three of them. Quite honestly, we thought Judy had already been off the board by the Jets, so he wouldn't have been the first, but he turns out to be the first. And by the time the Cowboys came around, and this is a classic case, Dane, of holy crap, they don't need receiver. It wasn't a pressing need for the Cowboys, but it is one of those classic, oh boy, he's on the board. We can't pass him up. And that's exactly what happened to the Cowboys with CeeDee Lamb. So, you know, Ruggs, Judy to Denver, huge for them, huge pickup for them. And of course, CeeDee Lamb falling in the lap of the Cowboys, who now, quite honestly, could have the best 1-2 combination there in the NFL and receivers next year. Not to mention, of course, Michael Gallup, they still got, had a great year. All of a sudden, more weapons, more weapons, more weapons. Oh, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with Dak, but they better figure it out, because if he can't get it done with these weapons, oh, we got some problems.
Yeah, and, you know, when I told you there were a couple of these wide receiver picks where I think the light now shines on the quarterback.
Yeah.
This is absolutely one of them. Mm-hmm. Lamb going 17 overall to the Dallas Cowboys. And I frame it in a similar way as you do, Joe. It was not a need pick. Jerry Jones is on his yacht, you know, being like, hey, I can get another Oklahoma guy. What do you know? And by the way, Dallas takes two Oklahoma players, one from Tulsa, you know, so the idea of Oklahoma guys there with Jerry, it continues, shall I say. But I do think this is a very interesting kind of onion to peel the layers back on, Joe, right? Mm-hmm. They get CeeDee Lamb at number 17. You mentioned that they have already paid Amari Cooper.
Right.
You mentioned that they have already used legitimate draft capital last year or 2 years ago to get Michael Gallup, mm-hmm. right? And now CeeDee Lamb at the first round level. And this is nothing negative about who CeeDee Lamb is as a football player. He deserves to be drafted in the first round, right? But then you have these three wide receivers. You also, Joe, have paid your running back at an exorbitant amount. And this running back, last time I checked, Joe, every time he's healthy, he leads the NFL in carries.
Yep.
Right? So I guess my question then is, do you envision the Cowboys to be a run-dominant team or a passing team? Because if they're a run-dominant team, then I think the CeeDee Lamb pick was a silly use of assets.
Right.
And if they are going to evolve to be more of a throwing team under Mike McCarthy, like he was in Green Bay, so be it. But then you didn't need to pay Zeke that money, and you could replicate that production for what you want in a different route. I also think because you go and get CeeDee Lamb and you say, hey, we've got everything you need, Dak, now go make it happen, I think you're setting yourself up for the drama. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, it's going to happen because let me tell you what's going to happen. Dak Prescott's going to go out there.
Right.
And he's going to put up great statistics. And the Cowboys' offense will look dynamic. Then what are you going to do, Jerry?
Especially against worse teams.
Yeah. Exactly. Then what are you going to do, Jerry? Yep. You know what I mean? And so I just think that by giving him the extra weapon, mm-hmm. you then frame this weird drama later on. And if you're going to be a run-heavy team, you didn't need the wideout. If you're going to be evolving this way, then you're going to create drama with Zeke Elliott. I think they are painting themselves in a corner, Joe.
Yep. I I get why you do it. You don't often get that kind of position sitting at 17. I got no problem with it. I mean, you could have went edge rusher there, which is what you need more than anything else. I get it. But the fact that he is there, now what do you do? Well, you can't cry over spilt milk. You already paid Zeke the money. So now you've got to hope that Mike McCarthy is the guy that is going to take all of these pieces, these new shiny toys that you got, some old, some new there, and he can make Dak Prescott a championship caliber quarterback, because that's really what it's going to come down to now. Anything, the only thing CeeDee Lamb did here was ratchet it up another notch for the Dallas Cowboys, where anything less than a Super Bowl appearance and even a win is a utter disgrace, all right? And you know that's coming, Dane, as I do. This is going to be Cowboys. I don't want to hear it comes down to week 17 and you got to beat the Giants to win the division. Like, you better win, and you better be winning big. But the problem with the Cowboys has always been, and the knock on Dak has been, you look all world against the lesser teams, the better competition teams. That's when you go MIA. That's going to be the problem here. You give $100 million to a wide receiver now, Amari Cooper, who we can argue all day on whether or not he is a $100 million wide receiver. You also go ahead and you overpaid for a running back that you probably could have replaced.
But you got them now.
You got them all now. So now it's up to Mike McCarthy. To me, maybe, just maybe, after it's all said and done, the most important pick of the Cowboys over the last 2 years was that coach and going with Mike McCarthy. Let's see what he can do and how he can make all of this go. Defense still going to be a problem, but it's quite obvious to me that you've decided if I score 60 points, it doesn't really matter if my defense is worth the crap, right? So this is going to be all offense, Dane, all offense with the Cowboys all day.
And here's the thing, Joe. You know, in the second round, they get Diggs, the cornerback, addressing
right, which is great. I got no problem with that either. Yep.
They do go defense, kind of with the rest of their relevant picks in the draft, shall we say. I fault it from a kind of team construction side. Right. You know what I mean, Joe? Like, given the wide receivers you had, given the running backs you have, given what you're already going to the table with, I don't know that this should have been the priority, despite the fact that the amazing talent that CeeDee Lamb is was still on the board. Joe, the other one, though, is in Denver. Okay, in Denver, where Jerry Jeudy goes, right? He goes 15 overall to Denver. Joe, I got to tell you, you mentioned it before. They're in the division with the Kansas City Chiefs, right? So they're on some like, well, we're going to have to score some points. I believe, and I know you've said that you have confidence in Vic Fangio, their head coach, the defensive side of the ball is going to be okay.
Yes, yes, it will.
Know about that. Joe, Denver is shoving their chips to the middle of the table in support of second-year quarterback Drew Lock, right? So in a similar way, like, hey, all eyes are on you, Dak. Make it happen. But there's the contract aspect in play for Drew Lock. It's just like, hey, are you the dude or not? You know what I mean? And like, they already have Cortland Sutton, who is emerging as a top-end wide receiver, right? They have the tight end who they like in Fant. They go out and sign Melvin Gordon and spend money to do so. Now you put in Jerry Jeudy with your first-round pick. You double down on it, Joe, in the second round. K.J. Hamler, you can talk to Jared Smith, who is a Penn State guy, Arielle, a Penn State girl.
Yeah.
K.J. Hamler is the perfect little slot receiver, is the dynamic aspect. So you got your outside receivers. Yep. And Joe, I'll go even further. You may not have like seen it because it was a day three pick, Joe, but in the fourth round, they get Albert O, the tight end out of Missouri. By the way, Drew Lock went to Missouri. By the way, Albert O was 4.3 in the 40, the fastest tight end out there. They are giving Drew Lock all the weapons that he could possibly need. I feel comfortable about Denver on the defensive side of the ball because their pedigree is always there. They still have Von Miller, and their head coach is able to do it. I think Denver was one of the big-time winners, and they added pieces where they needed to and are shoving all in. You know, we'll see what Drew Lock is made of, huh?
Well, they obviously believe in him because if you better believe in him because you're going out of your way to make sure that he's got the weapons around him in order to be able to make some plays. And he is, I mean, without a doubt, we've got certainly, Dan, a situation there where Denver has decided and has done it smartly, going, listen, we are going to give our quarterback, our young quarterback, every weapon known to mankind. This has been a problem with the Jets for so many years, is that you get yourself a new quarterback and you spend the first three picks on defense. Like, yeah. It's kind of been that, like, Sam Darnold is a guy that's like, all right, so we're giving you a bunch of B and C players on offense, go out and make something happen. I love that what they've done here is they said, okay, we're going to give this kid an opportunity who's shown flashes. Now we're going to go out, give him some young guys, where we're going to go out and give him some playmakers. So, no.
Hey!
And we're back. All right, good. Yeah, thank you very much for that. This brought to you by Duracell. Yes,
yeah,
this, yes.
What was saying, Joe? Go right
yes,
ahead.
Yes, let me go ahead and finish my thought there, that at least we're not criticizing John Elway this draft of picking a quarterback that may or may not make it. I love teams in this draft, Denver included, that obviously, and to me this is always the most important part, what is your identity as an NFL franchise as a team? What is your identity? And then you take that identity and compare it with how you approach a draft. And Denver is a team that has decided what they're going to be, who they're going to be, and they went out and drafted for that. They're going to give Drew Lock every chance to not, you know, to succeed here. They are going to do everything they can in order to surround this guy with kids that can play, which is great. I got no problem with it. Dallas, too, has decided, listen, we've got weapons now on offense. We're going to be able to score with the best of them. The Kansas City Chiefs aren't going to score them. The Jets, finally, to me, I thought they have an identity. It's quite obvious what they have done here, certainly with the offensive line that they picked around there, wide receiver, the defensive style of players that they went to get. The Jets are looking to get younger, faster, more athletic, and they got a nice little mix of veterans, too, that they went out and got here over the last couple of days. So, to me, Joe Douglas and Adam Gase, my biggest fear was two guys not on the same page here, because that's what's happened in the past with Gase, certainly during draft time. Yeah. But it appears to me the New York Jets were on the same page. Joe Douglas and Adam Gase are on the same page. I now know at least what the Jets are putting together. I know the identity they're looking to put together.
I think that makes sense also, Joe. You know, at least there's a plan. Whether you agree with it or not, that's another conversation for another day, right? But being able to see what that identity is and them actually kind of sticking to their guns, right? Joe Douglas has an absolute commitment to build from the inside out, and we've seen that. He signed four offensive linemen in the offseason, and then when he had a chance to go get the other one as the cherry on top, he did that as a priority. Some of the defensive players you are seeing are all kind of game-breaking speed playmaker type. I agree with you, Joe. Another team. And it's funny to me, Joe, you talk about it from Joe Douglas and Adam Gase being on the same page.
Right.
Another team that I think showed you that they do this week was the San Francisco 49ers, Joe. And let me tell you how. Okay, first of all, they go, and at number 14 overall, they draft Javon Kinlaw. Hey, another defensive lineman to add to that rotation, the same way they've done in the first round ever since Lynch and Shanahan have been together. The other piece of this I think is interesting is at number 25 overall, Joe, they take Brandon Ayuk.
Yes.
And a lot of players, a lot of people I was talking to was like, oh, they need this kind of wide receiver. No, they don't. Think about what San Francisco does. Think about Deebo Samuel, right? Think about the boatload of running backs that they have going into this. Think about how it's a scheme kind of thing that gets them open. And Ayuk is that kind of Swiss Army-like, game-breaking speed, even return potential. He is a fit there. And I think the idea of fit is so important. We talk about the Patriots, Joe, how they never kind of got too hectic and pulled the trigger on a quarterback when they didn't need to. All of the defensive players they draft, we had the same kind of thing. Oh, they're versatile. Lines up as weak side linebacker, can go back in safety, in coverage, can help on the pass rush. Versatility for Bill Belichick. The other last one I'll throw out here in this vein, Joe, for the damn Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens know exactly who they are.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yep.
The idea that they didn't need to get one of these top wide receivers. Ariel, our friend and colleague, was talking about how wide receiver is such a need for her, for the Baltimore Ravens. And I told her, Ariel, the Baltimore Ravens are a run-heavy, play-action scheme. That's why they have tight ends running wide open in the middle of the field. You don't need to be the quote-unquote crisp route runner. Lamar Jackson in the play-action game you that space. They all go and get Duvernay in the third round, a speedster. And if you saw the coverage live, you saw how happy Harbaugh was when they were able to pull the trigger on that one.
Yep.
To their identity, a number of teams did it, Joe.
Yeah, a lot of identity at play here, which I think is great. We'll talk more about that coming up in hour two, including the team that didn't need one, but they went and got one anyway. And you know what? Nobody cares. We'll go ahead and talk about it. Coming up, hour number two, it is The Early Line. It is The Grid. It is SportsGrid.com. We'll be back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.